Hey everybody, Stu Smith and Jeff Nichols here again with another Tactical Fitness Report, and we are answering questions today. Had a couple of good questions this week, Jeff. First one was about running in boots or shoes. When should that transition start occurring?
Yeah, it's a little bit different from person to person. Again, like we always lead with, it depends. But the way that I look at boots is this. And this is in no way, it's not mudslinging or anything like that. It's like the boots are not a great thing to run in. Okay. No. But it's a necessary practical tool to be using in the selection. So should you be wearing boots in selection? Yes. Okay. So I say those two things to caveat and go, okay, well, boots initially should just be an introduction training just so you're familiar with how they change your training, right? Wear them on a day that you've been doing a running program for a while with a pair of shoes. Put the boots in and go, well, how did that affect me? Right? Do that. You do a rucking program, been rucking regularly. Throw the boots on to see how that impacts you. Good, worse, no change, maybe, right? Throw the boots on a day that's like deadlift heavy, not heavy in weight, but heavy in volume. Like you sprinkle these things into the training to go, oh, like, These don't negatively impact my training when I'm doing X. But I really don't like them when they're here. So it gives you an idea to experience what boots are going to feel like in this very controlled environment, whether it's a track as well or whatever it may be, before you show up to the selection process. That's the real value. It's you should still be doing most of your training in a stable training running shoe type atmosphere. You put the boot on throughout the training, sprinkle it in there to get used to the boot, right? To get used to how you're going to react to the boot and see if that improves or lessens your training value. That's all I can say.
Absolutely. I would agree with all of that. I would put on your boots for two reasons. First of all, to break them in, so you're not going to have hot spots when you wear them for real in the future. However, these days, you know, the boots that they issue now, I mean, you had the Bates, you know, when they were in, and those aren't bad. Those are pretty light running boots. I mean, they typically don't affect a whole lot that's going on with your running per se, compared to a running shoe, about this a little bit heavier, but not much. Now they use the Nike Combat Gen 2 boot, which is even lighter and more flexible than the Bates.
Yep.
Back in my day, we had the old Vietnam era jungle boot.
Yep.
And those sucked. You did everything you could to make them lighter. You took out the steel shank and the all the stuff that was in it to prevent bungee sticks from going through them and stuff, just to make them any bit lighter that you could. And they weren't fun boots to run in at all. I remember when the Bates came out, we're like, oh man, these are the best. We thought they were fantastic. Almost like we called them air boots. You know, they're just so today, I would say it's not that big of an issue to make that transition into boots, just because there's not a steep learning curve for them. You know, they're not a pound a piece, you know, they're a little bit heavier than your running shoe. So, like Jeff said, notice the differences that you see. You know, does it change your stride a little bit because you don't have as much ankle mobility? Because that's what they're for. They're for so you don't sprain your ankles. You know, have a little bit more support in that lower part of the limb. And then, you know, is there anything else? You know, does it change your time? Does it change your pace? You know, do you feel it in your hip flexors more? Because they are a little bit heavier when you're running. You know, so I tell you where I felt running was when my pants were wet and I was wearing boots. That's heavy. Yep. That's just heavy running and doing flutter kicks, you know, in wet pants and boots. You know, I will say this. I was not prepared for that physically. You know, I did flutter kicks before going to Buds, you know, shorts, tennis shoes, maybe even wear boots every now and then. But I was not prepared for wet flutter kicks on the grinder. I remember hip flexors were screaming those first few times. So.
The only thing I could say about boots then, other than that, is how they're laced. It's kind of hard to describe them, how they're laced, but you're going to cover that. Like you essentially don't want the laces to be crossed over where the ankle's at, right? You know, you lace them cross, mm-hmm. right where the J is, right? Usually yep. run that lace straight through so there's no crossed over the ankle. So essentially it's like, imagine a tennis shoe, right? When it terminates, you tie it over your forefoot, right? What you don't want is laces over your ankle. So you leave that open and then you, I guess over the hinge of the ankle, and then you loosely just cross it up the ankle. And that's just merely to keep your pants in there. Right. And they're a compressive thing. So it's almost like ideally you would have two laces, one that just laces up the shoe part. And then you have one that laces up the ankle, but you don't want to have two laces and buds.
Yeah.
You just run that lace straight up. But that's the big thing too, is a boot does a really bad job of letting plantar and dorsiflexion happen. But if you lace it that way, the other way I mentioned, you don't really have that issue. True. And then essentially that's why with the Nike, right? The new Nike ones, the Bates, or even like the Oakley ones they fiddled with, they're essentially a tennis shoe with just a long canvas ankle.
Yes.
More or less, they really are, which is why it's a good boot for what they're doing.
Yeah, they're running boots.
Yeah.
Because they were getting a lot of injuries, and they still get a lot of injuries, you know, at Buds, and largely due to the poor running platform that they were using for decades prior. Yeah. I'd like to see if that changed with the Bates, and if it's changing with the Nike, that would be interesting.
Right,
see if
right.
it was worth it. But they, like I said, the worry of making that transition is a little less nowadays because of the boots are just so much better and so much lighter. The other question, Jeff, we had was about mixing lifting into running cycles, you know, how to do that without negatively affecting either, right? So, you know, negatively affecting your pace that you're trying to get better. And this is assuming that it is not a sprint style of running program that they're trying to get good at. It's more of a longer distance timed run, pacing type running mixed with lifting.
Right. Yeah. And like, that's kind of Pandora's box, you know, like there's so many depends and what ifs and all these sort of things. So like, we kind of try to bracket it into this answer that's why we take initially the reason why we want you taking a PST with splits, right? Again, because that's the first snapshot we get at what your state of readiness is. Like, how are you doing? And like, because people take the PST and all they see is pass fail. But what you're seeing is the numbers. You're seeing the numbers are showing you, hey, am I anaerobically weak or am I aerobically weak, right? Am I lacking anaerobic strength endurance, or do I have aerobic or anaerobic strength endurance? That's what the PST is. And so we go, okay, well, and that's always the common thread. It's like, I don't want to lose my ability to run. I don't want to lose my gains, whatever it may be, whether it's lifting, running, whatever it is. Okay, understand that. So it's really quite simple, but what's the hardest part is you as the athlete, you have to be the measurer, the objective measurer, okay? So you can do them both, but in either case, if you're doing both of them to your utmost effort, that's usually not the best idea. One's going to take away from the other because you're going to do so much effort.
Yeah, you're not going to get faster at running and you're not going to get stronger at lifting.
It's not going to happen.
One of the other can occur, but they typically both don't improve together unless you are a complete newbie. And you have that initial
novice, yes.
Yeah, that you have that initial adaptation to any type of training. You're just going to see, you know, skyrocketing and then flattens out. But yeah,
you bet. And that's the thing is, what a weird thing that the more competent you become to training, the harder it is. I say the more finite work it takes for you to create an adaptation.
True.
Because what you do is you get closer and your reasons for not improving aren't general anymore. The more you train, the further from general you become, the more specific you become because you have general strength. You've already gotten that general strength. Your general
exactly.
power, your general endurance has shown up.
Nice.
Right? So don't think that you're going to acquire this general work and then all of a sudden it's just going to be easier to become a faster runner. No, it actually becomes more difficult, right? Because it takes more effort and more demand to create a further adaptation.
Yes. Right? So, absolutely. Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it, general and specific, because I haven't really explained it that way, but that is a great way to explain it, because we do come into this with a general amount of strength and power in our background. Some may be more than others.
You bet.
Right? That one person may not need to lift at all and just needs to run. Right? However, if you're an endurance guy, you probably don't have a lot of lifting under your belt, and it will not hurt you to do that. In fact, it would probably help you to add in some lifting into running, because you'd maybe not need to get better at running. You just need to maintain your running, but you need to get better at your strength, and vice versa, depending on if you're the strength athlete.
Yeah. And that's why this all comes down to you as an athlete being honest with your assessment. Like, and this is what I mean is, oh, I took the PST and I did terrible. No, you did exactly what you needed to do to show yourself and or us where you need to improve. Like what a great thing that you now know that you need to improve your strength, endurance, your upper body, if your pushups are bad, right? Like, it's not like, oh shit, I failed. Like I'm a failure. No, like that is why it's a PST. The T stands for test.
Yes.
When you test something, the goal is to, how do I then improve my test? So it's the PST. Yes, we quantify it and pass fail, but it's not a failure. It shows you what you need to improve upon.
You know, that's a really good point, because I see the PST, it's not one test. It is five different events that you can break down even further and do 10 50s of a 500 to see where your pace is.
You bet.
Six quarters of a mile and a half to see where your pace is and where it falls off. You can even do the same thing for sit-ups. You know, sit-ups are one of those things that I feel is a pacing exercise, is that where people screw up sit-ups is they start off with like 35 in the first 30 seconds and they don't get 35 in the next minute and a half.
Yep.
But the next day, if they just work on their pace and do 20 in the first 30 seconds, they can get 80 in 2 minutes. Right. So it's a pacing drill. So, you know, push-ups and pull-ups a little bit different. You know, gravity tends to take it away from you, you know, the slower you go. So you need to work on your cadence to maintain that. But, you know, even though, you know, like I said, it's five exercises, I just broke it down into 19 different grading points where I can see where you're falling off on where your training is, where it needs to be focused on.
You bet. Because if you look at the push-up, you go, hey, what's the push-up testing? And they go, how many push-ups I can do? Okay. No. But what is the biological, what's the physiological reason behind doing push-ups, max number of push-ups in 2 minutes? It's not to see you can do the most push-ups. It's testing your upper body anaerobic strength endurance, right? How do I take this moderate weight?
Yep. Which is about
distance,
40% of your body weight. Yep.
Yeah. So like if you put yourself with a leaning rest on a scale, that's how much weight you're moving. It's going to vary a little bit, plus or minus 7 pounds. But my point is like the push-up is testing your anaerobic strength endurance in your upper body. So you go, oh, I did 45 push-ups. People go, my push-ups are bad. Like, no, your anaerobic upper body strength needs improving. And we do that that's where we have my programs and we have Stu's.
Yes.
It's choose your own adventure based on your physiological deficit, right? That's all it is. It's like, hey, my run needs to improve. And it's like, well, it's not the actual mechanics of the running that's improving the running. Yes, it is, but it's the physiological adaptation of aerobic buffering that happens when you run a good program. So it's like, oh, my running's bad. We as coaches go, hey, his anaerobic and aerobic endurance is poor. We're not saying, hey, little Johnny's runtime is bad. Stu and I go, hey, yeah, he really needs to work on his aerobic endurance. Well, how do we do that? Well, here's the five programs you can start from, depending on how much of an anaerobic or aerobic deficit you have, right? If you're trying to go from 9 minutes to 8:30, we don't need to do a lot of sustained cardio. We need to do a lot of sprint work. If you're at 11:50, we're not so worried about sprint work. We're more worried about sustained endurance, you know, through cardio, right? So It's the PST that gives you guys the insight. Our programs are the way to improve that adaptation.
Right. Yeah. Very good point. You know what? That brings me to another question. If you got a few more minutes, Jeff, you know, someone asked, like, when is the best time for someone to make that decision? Should I use Jeff's program? Should I use Stu's program? You know, I was mentioning it very similar to the way you did, is with just, you know, with your specific need. You know, Jeff has some really great answers to, you know, fixing, you know, those specific needs, right? I tend to have a different approach. I mean, it's at the end, it's all the same result, because it all, you put it all together and it makes my approach is I kind of try to maintain something, you know, to a degree while focusing on something else, where I try to maintain calisthenics and cardio while I focus on strength. But that's a minimal amount of, you know,
right,
when you're focusing on strength and vice versa. Jeff has a more streamlined approach to, like, hey, if you're weak, this is what you need. You need to build the muscle first with a hypertrophy program, and then we got a strength program, and then we get crush your push-ups, crush your running, your swimming. You know, it's
I've dissected it a little bit, right, to that point. And I think that that's, like, Stu would probably say this too, is, you know, any one of our written paper programs, they're an 80% solution. Because the reality is like what I do every day here with our guys and Stu's doing with his guys, is it's like we're using that skeleton of our programming, but our engagement with the athletes is very, very specific.
Yeah.
And that's the unfortunate side, is we can't offer you that level of specificity in paper.
That is true.
So, you know, and so it's like people are like, well, which programs are your viewers and Stu should be doing? I'm like, yes, both. Because they're going to get you there if you've both of our programs are going to get you there if you have allotted yourself the appropriate amount of time in your training, right? Which, again, we keep saying, give yourself a year, year and a half from the starting point, because of whether you're following mine or Stu's, are you going to do it perfectly? No. But our programs allow you to, I hate to use the word, make a bit of a mistake and not pay for it. Because you're following a very specific distance and time duration of a program to create adaptation, right? Yeah. You're never going to maladapt in a good programming if you're moving properly. So you might go through mine and go, well, I kind of overreached. Stu's initial running program may be better for you. Yeah, you bet. But at the end, whether you're doing mine or his and you've gone through them, you've just improved.
Yes. Yeah. You know, that's a very good point.
Either way, you've improved.
I have had so many people that, you know, have come into our workouts, right? And we're in a strength program, right? And, or, you know, maybe, you know, this is a better example. We're doing running and calisthenics, and I have a guy who can't run because he's hurt, right? And he's doing Jeff's hypertrophy program. Right. So he goes into the weight room and hits the hypertrophy program while we're doing something else. You know, there, you're right. You can individualize this really well in person, and you can't do it in a book. And unfortunately, the book and the paper workouts, you know, the online workouts that we download, you know, you kind of have to personalize them for you and for your weakness and strengths. Yep. So what we do is we have a system where we train X in the morning. Right. In the afternoon, our why is whatever is your specific weakness.
Yep.
So we'll, you know, there'll be a guy who lifts a little more because he's weak, but he can crush it in the pool, or he can crush the run. There's a guy who gets out of the weight room because he needs to focus on the swimming and drown proofing and those water skills like that, because he sucks at them. Right. Same for running. You know, the guy that's going to go do quarter mile intervals over on the track, because he needs to work on his pace. You know, just depends on that. And I think the best way to go about it is maybe not necessarily think about Jeff or Stu's program, but think about it as your strength and weakness, and have an answer to that weakness. Because if you ignore your weakness, they will be exposed almost immediately.
Yep. Yeah. And then I think that's where we can't handhold you guys in that sense, nor would it benefit you. So that's why, it's like we have paper programs, right? We've got a handful of people that we train in person. And then that's why these videos are valuable, because if you listen to the consistency and way we're trying to get people to run and swim and these things, you'll see that the hardest part, that's all we're talking about constantly, is getting you guys to assess, like assess yourself as an individual. Like, what should I do next? Right. And that's why these videos exist. That's why, you know, the video content is so valuable, whether it's on my website or Stu's at membership sites, because it's like, once you've learned from us, especially in person, even the programs take on a totally different view. Like once you've gone to a clinic that Stu and I have taught, or once you've learned from Stu in person or me in the water, when we say things in a critique of a video, it takes on a whole new life.
Yeah, that's true.
Right. And so that is why it's so important for, yeah, the programs are just, they're only as good as your ability to identify your personal weaknesses. We have enough programs collectively to encounter, improve, to get rid of whatever every weakness you may have. A lot of times the most difficult thing is for you guys to navigate what choice that is. But if you're honest with yourself saying, I need to improve my running, and that's the focal point of my day, whether it's mine or Stu's, you're going to improve. Not, hey, I'm going to improve my pull-ups, my rucking, my swimming, and my strength all. No, it's not going to happen. You're not unique. Your physiology doesn't demand anyone else. The situation that you're encountered because of your life and MEPS and da-da-da-da, it's not unique. As long as you are a human being and you have normal human function, you're dealing with the same thing that everyone else is. True. It's just from a different life point. Right? What sports are you exposed to? What cat, like whatever, like the life point of each individual is different, but your physiology is not unique.
Yeah. Very good point. Cause it does matter about your athletic history. You know, the time,
it very much does. Yes.
Yeah. The amount of time you've been actually doing this type of training matters, you know, cause it does take some time, especially if you're transitioning from one particular strength, you know, into an equal and opposite weakness.
Yeah.
You know, that takes some time to transition. And unfortunately, a lot of people neglect that and they just join because they can, when they really should be joining whenever they're actually ready.
Yep.
Jeff and I did a great podcast, and then we came up with a nice little assessment tool in an article. So I'll put that link below to the podcast and the article in the description below. You guys check that out, because it's everything that Buds uses as well as part of their assessment. We took off, you know, the all the elements that they were looking at that people had success during Hell Week. Remember that podcast we did?
Oh yeah.
And it was just a bunch of markers of really good study of, you know, certain elements of, you know, activity, from weighted pull-ups to shuttle runs to deadlift and bench press, all these extra lifts that go beyond the PST that can help you with your assessment overall. And now you're starting to look at it more, you know, as a tactical athlete and be all encompassing versus just a PST or just in the weight room or just in the, you know, on the track or in the pool. You know, it's focused on all of those elements, and it's a good little assessment tool.
Yep. No, totally agree. Because the more data points you have, the better, as long as your body physically is consistent. That's what's so important. And that's what's so hard to do, is maintain consistency when you're the observer. Right? Yeah. It's real hard, but that's why you take time on things. You take notes and you record yourself and you go through those sort of things as if you're your own coach, so you can look and see if you're consistent. So yeah, it's a tough thing, and it's not a perfect science, but that's why timeline is so valuable. If the timeline you're choosing to get prepared is plenty, like I said, you can, now you're not making mistakes, but you can kind of come hit some plateaus throughout that 18 months and just be better off for it.
Yeah. Good point. And you made a really good point about just being honest with yourself. And, you know, you really kind of have to check the ego at the door, you know, and realize, ooh, I do suck at pushups, or I do need to get better at running, you know, and talk about the specifics of that, but then realize, you know, it's your endurance, it's your anaerobic muscle stamina. You know, it's things that go beyond just sucking at a certain exercise, and that you can apply to many other exercises and movements if you work on that physiological weakness versus just working on pushups.
And that's I know that's a hard thing to do, because especially if you're new to this, a novice to this, we're saying, take all these tests, pay attention to all this stuff. And then the whole time you're like, man, I got a lot of work to do. You do. And that's the other, that's the real big peanut right there. The real big pill to swallow is that we're not asking you to like, to like the fact that you have to do all this work. But if you really want to do this job, you, I think you owe it to yourselves to give yourself the best opportunity to succeed. And that is good programming, a lot of patience, okay, and some open communication about how you actually are doing, right? No one cares about how many push-ups you get. They'll only care about, right, that you did the push-ups and never had a problem doing them.
Yeah, good point.
That's it.
Yeah,
push-ups is just an example, right?
Yes, of course.
Running, that's, nobody's, I don't remember my times in Buds necessarily. I just know that I did them all. I did every single push-up I was supposed to, every pull-up I was supposed to the best of my ability, and Buds worked out great. It worked out really good for both of us.
And met the standard.
You've met and exceeded the standard every time. You bet.
All right. So, Jeff, you got anything good going on there in Virginia Beach at the Performance First facility?
Yeah, so we got right now, we've got about 18 guys here throughout the day. It's super blessed to have it. You know, we'll probably be doing another one of these groups probably May timeline. Nice. We'll have another group and we'll do some PST clinics in between there. But man, I just think for all of you that have spent time listening to Stu and I just want to say thank you, all of you, like you, because Stu and I off camera, we're talking about something you guys don't ever get to see probably is, you know, in strength conditioning, with respect to people in the collegiate and the pro space, you know, not a bad job, but I still think we have the best job in the world because we don't have to motivate you guys at all. You guys really give a damn. And that makes our job way, way more fun, way more fulfilling and way more enjoyable.
I was telling Jeff, I'd much rather work with guys that are just preparing to serve, you know, and they show up first thing in the morning. You know, they don't need my motivation to show up. And if they did, you know, they wouldn't show up anymore. So,
right, exactly.
I mean, it works out real well. And but you guys give me hope for the future. Really, I do.
You bet.
Seriously, appreciate it. So, all right. So check out Jeff. His website is performancefirstus.com. My website, stusmithfitness.com. And if you got a weakness, check them both out.
You betcha.
Try to turn it into a strength. It takes a little time, but we can turn them into a strength for sure.
You bet.
All right. Thanks, Jeff. We'll see
you. Appreciate it, Sue.